Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Happy Friday, everybody. TGIF, with a little rain this morning. How about that? It's a great way to start the weekend. Glad to be here with you as we get you ready for the weekend. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, it's Sports Daily, and we've got a lot coming for you in this show. Max Powers producing for us. He's got that KFH hotline at 869-1240. We also have the other ways you can get in touch with the program through our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube X. You can leave us video comments there. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app. Just hit the little microphone if you're listening to us there. Even if it's not live, even if you're listening to this as a podcast, you can leave us those messages and we can go back and listen to those or maybe even put them on the air. Glad to be here with you today. Getting ready for a big weekend. The Final Four in action tomorrow. We've got the Royals back to baseball today. And then a big one dropped into our lap yesterday, late afternoon. A letter from Kevin Saul to Shocker fans about sort of the state of men's basketball and what needs to be happening to get them back where they want to go. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I got to tell you, it's hard to get up in the morning when you hear the rain falling in the background and it's just kind of relaxing and you just want to lay in bed and enjoy it. But I'm here. I'm ready to go, ready to kick off today, ready to kick off this weekend and get right into it.
You a morning? You like you a wake up person?
No.
Because it's always.
No.
It's always hard for me to get up.
No, I'm not. I've been in radio for 20 years, 20 plus years, and this is the first time that I've done anything in the morning. Like I've always been.
Really?
Yeah. I've always been like a middle of the day, afternoon, evening type guy in my career. So this is the first time, you know, in the last 3 months that I've had to set my alarm early and get up.
I've always been a night owl. This iteration of my work in the mornings has been the best one because I'm and it's more of a stage of life. Like I got to get up pretty much this time anyway to do the kids. So it hasn't been nearly as bad. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a half hour earlier than I normally would, but I can't believe you've never done morning. So my first paycheck in the broadcast industry, I used to get paid to do games on campus a little bit, but that wasn't really a paycheck. My first paycheck in the professional broadcast industry was filling in for the morning sports guy on, you know, the equivalent of KNSS. So kind of like the TED, the sports head updates. I would just that, like, that's all I did. But I came in for that, like when their guy would go out of town, and those mornings were probably 4 a.m.
Oh, man.
And I was in college.
Well, you're probably out until 2 a.m.
I was like, I just went to bed like two hours ago.
Yeah, that's rough. I know.
That was
honestly, like, it's gotten better. Like, I'm in a routine now. You know, there had been times that I would fill in occasionally, and that was rough because my body wasn't adjusted to it, and I would do it for like a week. And that entire week was terrible. And then I would go back to like my regular schedule. This, I'm getting into a routine now, which is good. But I got to tell you, this happened this morning. We're both getting older, obviously. It's rare now in my life that I can get through the entire night without having to get up and go to the bathroom. Like that's just kind of the world that I'm in now. And there's nothing better than when you get up and go to the bathroom and then you're like, man, I get to lay back down and go back to sleep. And like just kind of enjoy the remainder of the evening, remainder of the night. So I do that, go to the bathroom, do my thing, lay back in bed. I'm like, man, this is going to be awesome. And then I check my phone and my alarm's going to go off in 2 minutes. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like I thought I had 2 hours to sleep and I had 2 minutes. So that was the way I woke up.
Yeah, that's not good. And so then I did the radio thing, and I don't sleep great anyway. I have the craziest dreams like every night of my life, always have, even since I was, so I wake up a lot anyway. But my first full-time job was as a TV one-man band, basically, in the morning. Like, that was my first full-time, like 20-something years ago. Maybe it's like 20 years ago. And that was like about a 2:30 wake-up call.
Oh, that's to work rough. That
I think I had to be at work at 3 a.m. That was rough. And I did that for 6 months. You want to talk about never adjusting. Like, that was brutal. That was brutal. And then I got off of that as quick as I could. I'd never, though, until now, done anything since then, full time, basically, consistently this early in the morning. But we're not this early.
Yeah,
in the morning.
It's not that bad. You've got like the TV equivalent, you know, and like you were just talking about it. Like, now, I feel like these newscasts are getting earlier and earlier and earlier. It's like, hey, we're going to start your morning at 3:30. Like, why? Why are you starting the morning at 3:30?
There's a lot of farmers out there that get up that
I know.
Early.
And so then you've got, I would imagine, I don't know, but you've got, you know, these broadcasters that their alarm's going off at midnight, you know, or 11:30 or what, like, to go into work. And like,
the
that's
producers
just,
do.
Oh my God.
The producers
God.
Do. Like, there are times, like, if I was working nightside, right, and I was there a little bit late, which means I, you know, through the 10 o'clock news. So let's say I'm leaving like 11:30 or something. Like, I would catch the morning producers coming in. Like, we'd cross over that way, which was always wild. Or like late night, if you're coming back from Allen Fieldhouse and it's 3 a.m. and you walk in, it's like, yeah, it's like a full long game. Now, I will say it's not quite as festive. It's not quite as noisy and loud and vibrant as the newsroom in the afternoon.
Everybody's very grumpy. They're groggy.
Everybody is keeping to themselves. Yeah. Yes. The good thing is here, we still like to have fun early in the morning. We've got a big one to talk about, and that's Wichita State's letter yesterday. And we're going to dig in. Kevin Saul has always been very upfront and honest with the actual numbers involved. And so we get some of the numbers here as it pertains to the Shockers and what they feel like they need to compete. So we'll do that. We'll look at that. We'll dig in. How realistic is it? And it's interesting that it exists to begin with. So we've got all that covered for you. We will get you the latest on the portal. KU loses another piece to the portal. K-State loses their first piece to the portal. So those things both happen. We'll, of course, get you ready for the Final Four. We'll tell you our favorite bets for the weekend and the Final Four. And we got a lot of baseball to talk with the Kansas City Royals, including our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson. We will get you an opportunity to win some HTO today as well. So stay tuned for that. Quick shout out to Crestview Country Club. This rain, Tommy, you know this better than I do. When do the fairways green up?
They're getting there. I played on Wednesday afternoon, went out and played, and they weren't fully green, but they were getting there. They were fuzzy. Like, yeah, you had a little bit, like the ball was sitting on a little bit of green fuzz. So I would imagine probably by mid-April, you probably got another couple weeks, and then they'll be vibrant green at that point.
This rain's going to help. Yep. Of course, 36 holes out there at Crestview. We talk a lot about all the other stuff that's out there, and we appreciate their sponsorship, and we want you to give them a call about all that other stuff. End of the day, 36 holes are pretty incredible golf, and they are about to go into full swing. So that's the real deal out there. It's a golfer's paradise.
My favorite part about the club is the 36 holes. They've had the North Course, where the Wichita Open is played, they've had it closed the last few days because they're getting it ready for spring. Most clubs, you couldn't be able to play golf. The South Course was still open. I went and played the South Course.
Over there. They did vice versa. Perfect. I was going to play the South last weekend, and they did. They did just the opposite. I appreciate Crestview's support. We're coming right back. We'll talk about this letter from the athletic director at Wichita State. We'll return.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, our thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and all across the Odyssey family of networks. You can chime in. Shocker fans, we'll open this one up a little bit. Yesterday, Kevin Saul, Wichita State's athletic director, penned a letter, an email to Shocker Nation. And the city of Wichita, quite frankly, talking about the expectations, the needs for men's basketball to return to a level he calls nationally competitive top 25. And I would agree with that. He takes it deeper than just sports fans, improving the city's economy, attracting visitors, contributing to a thriving community. I agree with all that. We talk about it all the time. Wichita State basketball is Wichita's pro team. And the city buzzes a little bit more when they're really good. And they haven't been really good in a very long time now. Basically, the gist of this, and we'll get into more of the specifics. Kevin Saul's saying they need another $1 million in the NIL space for men's basketball. I've heard that that's around the number they've tried to achieve and been at. So if that's the case, that would be doubling it. But either way, it's another $1 million. And he says that's what it's going to take to be at that destination, that top 25 type program. Points out some of the things that we have pointed out forever. No football, right, to compete with the NIL dollars. So another million. Now, probably would have been better served to send that out on Monday for the stock market. Got a little rocky here, Tommy, but
yeah, the timing wasn't amazing.
Timing, not that was anybody's fault there, but that was unfortunate for the letter. But the letter's out there, another million. We know what some of the numbers are. I think a lot of people think only a million, that isn't going to get anything done, but it would. And it would add on to what they've already got in it. You know, you have to take baby steps. Is Wichita State ever going to throw around, you know, whatever the reported number was, $2 million for Coleman Hawkins? No, probably not. But I'm not sure any of the programs that we feel like they should be on a level playing field with are doing that either. They're not. So I think the Shocker's big challenge is to be able to keep, and maybe you disagree with this, Tommy, it's not so much going out and outbidding everybody for the highest ticket, you know, guys, they're not trying to bring AJ Store last year to Wichita State. What they have to be able to do is to make sure Colby Rogers doesn't leave last year, is to make sure this year Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington don't leave. They've got to, at minimum, they have to be able to retain and not get poached from their best players in reasonable circumstances, right? Like sometimes you're just like, okay, whatever. Duke, if you want to come in and pay that guy like that. But most of the time, that Wichita State has a long history now in recent years of losing its best player. When was the last time the Shockers brought back their best player, Tommy, from a year ago?
Probably. Wouldn't it be recently Kenny Poto coming back, you know, for the first year of Paul Mills? I mean, probably.
I guess. Poto wasn't.
Quincy Ballard came back this year.
But he wasn't their best player. Colby Rogers was.
Good point.
You know, like they retained a bunch last year. So I don't want to downplay that. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, you know, whether it's Ricky Council one year
point taken for sure.
Before NIL went wild, they were doing a better job of that, right? Like they were able to retain, they were able to do that stuff. But now that it's gotten to this level, that's where it's been really hard for them. So I'd say, like, for me, you can start there at least, like, where you don't lose that top threat from the year prior unless they're graduating. Or again, like, if the big, big schools come calling and can basically double your entire budget, like, okay, there's nothing you can do about that. You can, we could just wash our hands of it, not worry too much about it.
Yeah, it begs the question, like, on your point, if NIL was in the world that it was, it is now, back then, like, would they have been able to retain guys like Marcus McDuffie or Tyson Etienne? Like, would those guys have stuck around? Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, because of if that world was, you know, the way it is now, back then, I think it'd be tough.
It'd be tough, but you really think, like, Ron and Fred would be the two that jumped to the forefront. And I would say, and the only reason I would say that is because we know that the Shocker collective was able to make Greg Marshall a top five paid coach when he got his big contract. So yes, the appetite was there to spend basketball on Wichita State, to spend money on Wichita State basketball. Absolutely. It was. So I would say yes, but you got to get back there. Right. And we're trying to not finish eighth place in the American Athletic Conference, right? Like, we're looking at, you know, a program that was far, far behind in the NIL before things were taken over right now, a program that was still dealing with somewhat of a retention problem. Now it's a program that has had two unsuccessful years in the AAC, and all due respect to Kevin Saul, he would disagree with that level of success, but I think I'm more in line with the way Shocker fans feel about it. You know, I don't think Shocker fans are thrilled that they've won more games through the first 2 years, not winning percentage, but total games. Like, I don't think Shocker fans are particularly, I don't think they care, right? I think they care more about finishing 10th and 8th in the American and knowing that's not going to be good enough. Now, but that doesn't mean that there hasn't been a lot of progress. I think there has been in the last couple of years. Hasn't translated directly to wins and losses, but if you talk to people enough, there was enough problems behind the scenes that have gotten so much better that yes, you can count that to progress. I won't say there has been tremendous progress on the court, but I think there has been progress for the program for sure. And now they're trying to step that up and take it to the next level, I think, through NIL. That's why you see this letter. If you go into the letter, Saul says that since January of 2023, privately funded NIL revenue share resources to support men's basketball have grown 518%. Which is a great number. And he says Wichita State's developed a reputation of character and integrity in the NIL revenue share environment. I do think that last part's important. Some people may roll their eyes at that. I wouldn't. I would pay attention to that because that goes into, like, players talk, their representatives talk, people know. Like, I think that last part of being high character in the transfer portal NIL space is good, because I can tell you from talking to coaches all over the place that there is a lot of dishonesty in that world. Kids are promised things that they aren't delivered on, and you don't want to be there. So I'm glad to see the Shockers do that. The 518%, I don't know how much to make of that, Tommy, because it says NIL/revenue share resources. But so if you're including revenue share resources, that's a brand new thing. So that kind of throws that number a little bit until we get Kevin in here to maybe explain that a little better. I don't know what including revenue share means there, because they've never revenue shared before. So you're comparing that to zero. So that one I'll have to dig into a little bit, but it's certainly better than it was. There's no question about that. And significantly.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's significantly better. I would have loved to see a little bit more quantification on that a little bit, because, like, the percentage is on there, 518%. Okay, that's great, but I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know where it started, and I don't know where it is right now. Like, I would have loved to see that broken down into dollars and cents. This is where we started in January 2023. This is what we have right now, and not just a percentage increase. And I don't know if that's realistic to ask. I don't know if that's reasonable to ask. But I would have liked to see that, because, like, you can throw out a ton of percentages left and right, but without knowing the numbers behind it, okay, cool. Like, that's a big number of a percentage increase, But I would have loved to know what that actually means in dollars and cents. The other thing, too, is that while they need an additional $1 million, you just said a couple minutes ago that you've heard from different people that that's about where they live right now. But we don't know that to be fact, right? Like
we could ask Evan and he would probably tell us. Now, he didn't put it.
It would have been great to have that in the letter. Like, hey, this is what we have on the books right now to be able to play with, for lack of a better term, with our NIL situation with men's basketball. This is our budget. This is what we're working with. This is what we currently have to go and attract new players and retain existing players. It's this amount of money. We're going to need this amount of money to be able to realistically go and compete, not just in the American, but with the teams. And he uses it as kind of a guideline, a benchmark, teams that went to the Sweet 16 a season ago. So quantifying that, like I almost feel like, and I don't mean this as a knock on Kevin Saul, because I do think there is good information in this, but I feel like he quantified it about halfway. Like, if you could quantify it the full way, then that would help me at least be able to know, here's where things stand right now. Here's where we need to be.
I'll give you a devil's advocate answer to that. I don't know that you want agents out there knowing that information. You know what I mean? Like, I think you got to be careful there, because then somebody might say, well, I know you've got more. Give us more. I think you got to be protective with that stuff. So maybe he would tell you exactly what is there now.
Maybe it's not here's what we have in the coffers. Maybe it's here's what our budget is. You know, and there could be additional dollars somewhere else. But
if you play that hand, imagine Tommy as a manager going into a conversation or a contract negotiation with somebody and telling them from the beginning, well, here's what we have budgeted. We actually want to pay you a little less than that, but you know, we actually have it budgeted. Well,
but I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. I mean, I understand the point you're coming from, but all we're talking about is budgeted dollars. We're not talking about what's been spent. So like, these agents aren't going to know, hey, X amount of dollars have already been spent in that budget. We're not talking about how it's all.
Know.
Well, I get it. Like, maybe they're talking to each other or whatever, but there's nothing verified on that. So like, if the budget is $1 million, I don't have a problem with anybody knowing what my budget is. Now, I don't want them to know how I'm spending that budget and where those dollars are being allocated and what I've got left for all of that. But I don't have any issue at all with, you know, somebody knowing what my total budget is for this particular sport to spend on. Like, that doesn't bother me as long as I'm keeping it fairly close to the vest on what I'm actually spending and where those dollars are going.
Yeah, it's all interesting. And again, I do want to again point out, just I am appreciative of getting a sense of where the Shockers are and what they need. No matter how much they have now, they need another million. They feel like to be able to go and do the things that they need to do. Make no mistake about it. This is all to get players. And I don't think that there's even sugarcoating on that. Like, they need $1 million more to go get players. I don't know if they're going to get $1 million more. This is the chicken and the egg. And this is where you get to the part of the letter where I'm like, you know, this is where you're trying to paint the recent success of the program. And here's what the letter says about that. Paul Mills ranks third all time in total wins for a Shocker head coach through his first season, behind only Eddie Fogler and Gary Thompson. I've said here before, I think that's not the best number to use, because if you go by winning percentage in the first 2 years, Isaac Brown's, his immediate predecessor, was higher. Now, Brown, some people would say, was just riding through what Greg Marshall did. You can make that case. That's fine. Just remember, though, that they played fewer games in each of his first 2 years because they were dealing with COVID. So just keep that in mind on that particular note there. This one's interesting, and I haven't ever dug into this. Well, before I get to that, his second point says this: Coach Mills' first two seasons represent the best first two seasons our program has experienced in 37 years, all in a more competitive American Athletic Conference in a more challenging transfer portal NIL revenue share environment.
How's that quantified?
Athletic Conference is not more competitive.
Yeah.
But yes, it is a more challenging transfer portal NIL revenue share environment.
Like, what does it mean, the best first two seasons? Is that just relating back to the third all-time total wins for a Shocker head coach?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, now we're going to mix it up here, because then it goes into the non-conference piece. The 2024-25 non-conference win total of 10 is the highest in 5 years, and there was a return to the postseason for the first time in 4 years. The first part, no arguing. And I would say this to add on to what he just said. They're playing a more competitive non-conference times a million than what they played under Isaac Brown. Isaac Brown did not get good games scheduled. So absolutely, the Shockers are playing a much better non-con, and yes, they have been successful in it. Their challenge, of course, has been the incredibly slow starts in the first 2 years under Mills they've had in what I would call a less competitive American, if we're being honest. All the great American teams have been poached out, except for Wichita State.
Going to the postseason.
Coach Mills and staff have developed and recruited all AAC talent while returning the Shockers to their roots of being the best rebounding team in the conference. That last part's a little too in the weeds, but developing and recruiting all AAC talent is important. And again, I get it. I understand this pitch. He gave it to us and he called it. Some people might call this a spin. I definitely think it is a spin, but I understand it.
I don't fault him for that. I mean, like, no, yeah, I think it's,
and it's just like, we've got a job to do too. And our job is to try to embrace what fans are feeling. Nobody's happy with the win totals of the last couple of years. And the reality is Paul Mills isn't painted and placed up against Eddie Fogler and Gary Thompson of the 60s and 80s. He's placed up against Greg Marshall. And so was Isaac Brown. And he's right up against Isaac Brown. And so, like, I don't need to go further back than that. Now, the thing that makes this all very interesting and difficult is Greg Marshall didn't have to deal with hardly any of this stuff. He had transfers, but not like this. Not the transfer portal, not NIL. And Isaac Brown was just on the forefront with it. And one of the big reasons that they made the switch away from Isaac Brown is because they felt like they were being left behind in that front. So it's hard to do, right? It's because Paul Mills is in this new frontier now, right? Like I don't even know how to compare it to anybody because it's a totally different world now since he's taken it through. What I think the fair thing to compare it to is your peers right now and where Wichita should stand among its peers, because they're the ones that are dealing with the same environment Paul Mills is dealing in. Paul, you know, not Isaac Brown, not Greg Marshall, not Gary Thompson, not Eddie Fogler, but your peers around you now, because there are plenty of other places where you're getting consistent winning out of programs that Wichita State honestly ought to be at a higher standing than. So I think that's what you compare it to if you're going to do it fairly and really try to understand. I think the non-conference part is, and I haven't thought of it that way, but it is a good way to think of it because they have played more difficult non-conference schedules. There's no question, and they have been more successful in them. If you eliminated the slow starts of the AAC, and this is what's made it really hard for me to evaluate 2025, because if that's not there, we all knew as it's happening, we're like, what is going on? We saw this team in the non-conference. But it happened 2 years in a row, and then they righted the ship better this year than they did last year, probably. But if you
they righted it good a year ago. I mean, remember they made a run in the conference tournament a year ago. Like, they righted the ship. It was a little bit later than they did this year, but they still did. They did it both years.
So that's what makes it tough. That has honestly been the toughest part of the evaluation for me. Like, if I didn't watch the teams, I would look at on paper and be like, yo, that's not good enough. 10th and 8th in the America. I bring it up all the time. But again, like, what are we supposed to be doing here? Like, that won't work. I mean, you just like the last time they were 10th, they were 8th or worse in the conference, Tommy, the conference in which they played, any conference, was 2007 in Greg Marshall's first year. They were 9th. Before that, it was Mark Turgeon's first year. In 2000, they were 9th. Each of the following seasons after those, they were 5th. Let's get to some of this. Let's start on the phone lines. Andy with us there. We appreciate that. Andy, welcome to Sports Daily. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Question for you, and I'll kind of let you know where this is coming from. So I thought that this letter was pretty interesting, and the reason I thought it was interesting Jacob, you made a comment a long, long time ago that I kind of kept in the back of my mind. When the extension for Kevin Saul was released, you had made a comment that I believe that you had said the way that the athletic department released it was curious. And I think that your comment was similar to that the athletic department has not necessarily a transparency problem, but a communication problem, something to that effect. I don't know if you remember saying anything along those
lines.
Yeah,
let me just real quick.
Go ahead. Sure.
I would say that the university has a communication problem. I think the athletic department does a nice job. I think Kevin Saul is very open and forthcoming. I mean, he comes here most sure. of the time every other week. The university and I very greatly disagree with the university's policies on communications. That's where that comes from. Like,
okay,
what are they communicating to us? Just to make sure everybody knows where I stand on that.
No, I appreciate the clarification on that. So I've always tried to evaluate Kevin Saul and him coming on your program and being transparent with you guys and us and everything accordingly. But there's another side of me too. I have not totally been on board with Kevin Saul's decisions over time. Did we ever get clarification on exactly why the baseball coach was fired back at the time? Because from what I recall, there was some issues due to the baseball coach's health. And then all of a sudden he was fired or let go. And then there was also a letter put out. And I don't think we ever got clarity on why he got released. Do you guys remember exactly what the reasoning for why he got released was?
Well, I know the reasoning. I don't know if it was ever publicly released. And there's good reason for that, I would tell you. I can't imagine that it was like absolutely publicly released, but it was a tough situation. And I think there were levels of respect that it just needed to end the way that it did. But I would be surprised if I don't think they did. No.
Yeah, I don't remember. I do know that there had been, to your point, Andy, I know that there had been, you know, some communication publicly about, like you mentioned, health issues, but I'm not sure it ever really dove more into that, and probably for good reason.
It is for, okay. I can tell you that it's for good reason. That's not one I would lose sleep over. Let's just put it that way, Andy. Like, that one was going to happen no matter what. And I think they were trying to be respectful.
Okay. Also fair then. So I guess the other just little personal nugget on my end, and then I'll ask you guys an overall question on your opinion on Kevin Saul. I was not a fan of him getting rid of Isaac Brown. I thought Isaac Brown, the fact that he was so close with Marshall, I thought was a good thing with the program. I thought the program was still in a good direction with Isaac Brown. So the fact that they went a different direction, I thought was a little premature. So wasn't a fan of that. And I don't think I'm in the minority of people here in Wichita with that opinion. So I've got a little bit of heartburn from that decision. But at the end of the day, I'm wishing Paul Mills of the West the best for him. But so what I will ask the both of you as a general question, what do you guys think of your overall opinion of Kevin Saul, and how do you think he's doing in his role? And I know that might be a little bit tough with your close relationship with him, but I'll ask it to you anyway, and I'll ask you guys off the air.
Andy, I appreciate that. Don't ever think that a close relationship is going to keep us from being honest. We have a very professional relationship with Kevin Saul, and it has to stay that way, and it does. And I can tell you that the first time I met Kevin Saul was on a Sunday night coming into Sports Sunday on KWCH, and he drove up to the station to come on set with us, and I told you, we're really glad you're here. We really appreciate it, but we're going to need you to be here when things aren't going well either. And he said, no problem. And for the most part, he's lived up to that, outside of probably the Isaac Brown firing and job coach search for Kevin or for Paul Mills. I would say that he's lived up to that. Evaluation of the job, It has absolutely not been good enough on the court to me, in my opinion. Not good enough. Not where it needs to be. Just hasn't. But I'll also tell you that, it's hard because athletic directors wear two hats, right? They need their coaches to be successful, and they also need to do all the other stuff behind the scenes. So I would say as far as like fundraising and facilities, if you look at softball and some of these things and adding bowling and work, I would say in that lane, he's done a good job. In the success lane of the programs, most importantly, basketball, I would say it has not been good yet. And so that's how I evaluated. Not good enough. That's my evaluation of it anyway. Baseball's not as good as they should be right now. They've got a long way to go this season still. Women's basketball has been not
bad. I think it's okay to say bad. Women's basketball
And it is no disrespect to anything. It is all respect to men's basketball. Men's basketball stirs the drink. Everybody knows that. But it's more than that. Men's basketball stirs the drink for the entire university, for the community. So it's not, a lot of places, it's a little different. Like, this is a different situation. It's why Wichita State should be really successful, in my opinion. Like, it's the biggest show in town when it's where it needs to be. And so, like, there is so much amplification and so much of a magnifying glass on that particular program. This is just being real with it. And I think 95% of Shocker fans or just people in Wichita would agree. All the other stuff is great, but the only thing people are tracking is what the men's basketball program is doing at any particular time.
I think you're right on that. I mean, probably a second place, and it's probably a distant second, would be baseball, just because of the legendary history of the program. Sure. and trying to return it back to that, glory from the last 30, 40 years under Gene Stephenson. I think that as far as my assessment of Kevin Saul, it's less from an individual decision-making process, the different things that he has implemented or done or changed or, individual coaching hires or fires. It's the fact that one of the things that he has done since he's been here is with every decision that he has made or his department has made, he has stood behind it and championed it and not backed away from it, for good or for bad.
Right.
For good or for bad.
I agree.
And that's that to me. And maybe this is going to come across being a little soft on Kevin Saul. And I don't intend to, I'm not trying to be soft on him. I'm just saying there is a part I admire, even if you're going to make unpopular decisions in the public eye, own them, own that you're making those unpopular decisions. And from what I have been able to see in his tenure, and we're coming up on 3 years on the job for Kevin Saul, I don't feel like he shied away from it. And there have been some things that, honestly,
look at the cheerleader.
That's exactly the example I was going to bring up. He was roundly criticized for that. And you know what? Probably rightfully so. Roundly criticized. And I don't know, but like roundly criticized for that decision. He didn't shy away from it. He doubled down on it, And so to me,
the reason was realistic, right? Like it was a realistic reason to need to do it. They're asking for $1 million right now so they can pay players.
Right.
Like
and I think that on the front end, I think the criticism was you're having a hard time even selling these other seats. Why are you moving that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why are you opening up additional?
I will say this. I'm glad you brought this up because somebody asked me yesterday. I was probably at 5 games this year. Those seats were full at all 5 games I was at.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, take that for what you will. I think my overall holistic point is that, he's going to be assessed for his hires. We'll see how men's basketball plays out with Paul Mills, baseball, women's basketball, all these different things. Because as of right now, where it stands, all 3 of those major hires, at least right this second, have not panned out. Hopefully they will. And hopefully, 2 of the 3 or ideally all 3 will pan out. But as of right now, they haven't. And so he's going to be assessed with that. But I just look at it from you know, all of the stakeholders that are, you know, involved in the university. And I'm talking everybody from the donors all the way up at the top to Charles Koch, all the way down, you know, to the average Joe who just enjoys Shocker basketball or Shocker athletics in general, and everybody in between. You know, he's got to be public facing to all of them, and there are going to be unpopular decisions. And what I look for is, do you own them or do you shy away from them? Do you backtrack on them? Do you change your mind on them? And you know what? Credit to Kevin Saul, I feel like, because he owns the decisions that he makes.
Yeah, he doubles down on them. There's no question about that. And look, if Alabama all of a sudden and Nate Oates reaches the Final Four every year and the football program starts losing five games a year, guess what's happening to the athletic director?
Totally.
You know, like, it's a tough gig. So nobody needs to shy away from that. And don't ever, like, again, like, we have a great professional relationship with Kevin Saul, but we're never going to get up here and, like, not tell you what we think of the state of things. And so when you ask that question to evaluate it, I would tell you that off the court, I think things are doing well. I think they're raising money at a higher clip. I think they're doing a good job with facilities. I think, you know, all those things. But on the field, to play on the court, it has not been good enough. And so there, you look at it both ways, right? You look at, and all that really matters for him.
And
is
don't
what,
you think too, you know, I mean, you know, you want to talk about transparency and openness. I mean, don't you think that he would probably say that too? I mean, like, I think he would probably say it has not been good enough.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
in the letter to the fans, we're really trying to pitch that the basketball program has done a really good job the last couple of years, and it hasn't. And again, that doesn't mean it can't, and it doesn't mean there aren't positive things happening. It means the results at the end of the day are not nearly good enough. And you can try to say anything you want about how good they've been. Like, fans do not agree with that. Like, unless I'm incorrect, like, if there is anybody out there that loves the progress on the court, let us know. But I haven't talked to anybody that.
Well, and I know that it's all centered around Shocker basketball, right? For good reason. I get all of that. You know, but I think that it's realistic. Like, you can take a look at a baseball team that was picked to, I think, win the American or be second in the American.
Second
in the American. And what's their schedule, right? Or what's their standings? Like, where are they at? Their record? I think they're 10-18.
I'm going to evaluate baseball. I honestly haven't even dug in there yet because I'm still
10-18. 10-18.
The transfer portal is stealing the attention away from everything else. I'll be honest. It's taking the ability to focus on any of that. All right, we have a lot of video comments. I think more to do with the state of the program. We'll get into that in the next hour as well. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming right.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you. Another hour rolling on. We have a lot of Shocker talk to get to, as we've got comments flooding in on the letter to Shocker fans from Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul. I think intent executed, because it has Shocker fans buzzing and talking, Tommy, as we can tell. There's a lot in there about the $1 million, need another million. We spent some of the last segment led by callers talking about the evaluation of Kevin Saul. Let's talk about the evaluation of men's basketball, Tommy, which is where I think this all lands. We've got Quantum Knight on YouTube saying it'd be nice to see Wichita State zig while others zag to find creative solutions to be competitive. He goes on, don't tell me it's not possible when we see the Mountain West get 3 to 5 March Madness bids every year. The WCC gets a couple schools in every year. Valley schools get in. Those universities have similar resources. And he says that proves it's not an NIL or transfer portal issue. I don't think that's far off, Quantum. I don't think that's far off, honestly. I would say the same thing, and I do pretty frequently. Like, I'm pretty sure that the AAC gets similar or better money than the Mountain West in a TV deal, at least the basketball portion of it. The Big East is a different story. So if you want to compare to Creighton or Xavier or some of those schools, they get a little more in revenue share, but the AAC gets a decent chunk of change here. And when you see a lot of Mountain West schools, San Diego State, Colorado State, the last few years has been really good. We mentioned Creighton, Memphis thrives in this. Like, there are schools all over the map. Why has FAU been able to be pretty consistently good and all of these things? And, you know, a lot of the time, I think you said this earlier this week, a lot of the time, Tommy, it's because they have great coaches. And I think that, like, I would be pretty surprised if Colorado State has a bigger basketball NIL budget than Wichita State. Let me put it that way. I would be surprised if St. Mary's, or if, hell, even San Diego State, when you're talking about what goes to basketball, I'd be pretty surprised if any of these places have bigger NIL budgets than Wichita State. Wichita State's asking for another million. And this is an interesting point out of that letter, is that Kevin Saul took the time to, you know, particularly point out that we maintain a distinct advantage over our peers, given we're not raising NIL and revenue share dollars to support a football program. And I agree with
totally.
That. They will be able to, if this goes the way that everybody wants it to go, devote far more resources to men's basketball than all those schools we just explained are football-focused schools. Even San Diego State, don't kid yourself. And call, like, these are universities that are more focused on football than you could say that about any Mountain West school. Why has New Mexico been consistently good? Right, like,
they've had a great coach.
And that's not a knock on Paul Mills, but don't misunderstand. While I'll tell you that I don't think it's been successful enough for 2 years under Paul Mills, it's not what we're saying. We're saying there are no excuses for Wichita State holistically to not still be in that mix of schools. And in fact, I would tell you that I think they should be ahead of most, if not all, of those schools based on what we know the program is capable of, Tommy, as much as anything else.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern, you know, from that letter is you can't throw good money after bad. And I'm not suggesting that it's been bad money, you know, so far, but I don't think we know. And that's the most nerve-wracking part for me, is that we don't know yet if the investment has worked. And, you know, I think one other thing that hasn't been talked about, at least in this conversation today, has been there's been a lot of resources that have had to be allocated for people to not coach at this university, you know. And so regardless of, you know, what things look like in the future, I do think we have to acknowledge the fact that there's a lot of money tied up to guys like Greg Marshall and Eric Wedge and Darren Boatwright and, you know, other people like that. Like, that you're still paying these people to not coach for your university. There are resources that are being tied up for people that are not contributing currently to the state of Shocker athletics in any way, shape, or form. That's a problem. Until you can get yourself out from underneath of that, it's going to continue to be a challenge. But what I fear is that you've got people that, you know, look at this, you've got Shocker donors and boosters and whoever that look at that and they say, okay, Wichita State needs another $1 million. And so here we go, and let's make it happen. And then they finish eighth in the American next year. And then there's another letter that comes out and says, we need another $1 million to stay up with the rest of the league and to be competitive with our peers and all of that. Like, my fear is that it's a moving target, and that's not necessarily the fault of Wichita State. That's the entire landscape. You know, they might need $1 million right now, but what are they going to need in 2 years? And what are they going to need in 5 years? Until there is, like, total reform and guardrails put into place, and I don't know if that's a salary cap, I don't know if that's budgeting by conference or what that is. I'm sure we're going to get to that point eventually, but until we do, it's a moving target. And, you know, yeah, he can throw out a 518% increase in NIL and revenue share dollars from January 2023 to today, and that's great, but still, that's not quantified for me. I don't know what that means. I don't really know what it means for dollars and cents, but I know they need $1 million. And is that going to be the same a year from now? They might need they might need $2 million a year from now.
Correct. It means that again, you inherited almost nothing in this world and you're trying to build that up. And they have.
Give credit where credit is due. They have. Yes.
And now they need more. And again, chicken and egg. If the Shockers came out and won the American last year, you probably don't even need to write a letter. It just comes, right? It comes through attendance. It comes through all these things. So it's an interesting point. Adam says the days of Wichita State being a competitive college are gone. There isn't enough money. Kids don't care about the past. He lives in Corpus Christi, and A&M is a more relevant college. A&M Corpus is a more relevant college than Wichita State is now. It's not.
I don't know how to quantify that.
They might have had more success in a year or two, but Texas A&M Corpus Christi is not more relevant than Wichita State right now. And he says it's the opposite. The money made off of football can help basketball. But you got to understand, I think it's USA Today put out in March of last year, 25 out of 130 FBS schools reported, I think, a profit. It's not that, of course, success of a major power football program helps basketball, but that's because you get TV dollars out of it. So, like, unless Wichita State plans on joining the Big 12, right? Like, it doesn't not having football should help them the way it helps all these Big East schools. That's what you got to look at. Don't compare it to Power Five football. Compare it to the Big East. Compare it to Creighton, right? Why is Creighton able to do it? Because Creighton men's basketball is the premier program of a university. Of a city, when you talk about Omaha. To me, Creighton is the most comparable school, other than it being private. And if you don't want to do Creighton, you can do Memphis. And if you don't want to do Memphis, you can do San Diego State. And if you don't want to do San Diego State, you know what I mean? Like, the problem with comparing those is they're football schools also. So you almost have to dive in then to the Big East, which has a better TV deal right now. But Wichita State has the ability to do any of these things because they've told you that there is an appetite to do it through the contract that the university was able to get for Greg Marshall. The greatest achievement of Darren Boatwright was the contract for Greg Marshall. Like, there was an appetite to get him to be a top five paid coach. Okay? Like, think about that for a minute. That is a chunk of change larger than what NIL budget would be right now that they're asking for, by a significant amount, by the way. So, yes, it is there, but you're not going to get there until this program is consistently winning again. You're not. And it is harder to do that now, I think, than it ever has been before if you don't already have it. We know Kansas is going to be fine, Tommy, because Kansas can go get any player they want. Now, for them, it's about picking the right players. For Wichita State, you just hope you have enough to get the players. And it's not trying to compare them directly, but that's the challenge for Wichita State right now. And the reason for this letter, they feel like they still need the resources to be able to go get done what they need to get done. And that's never been more challenging.
That could be very accurate. And I'm not discounting the fact that they need $1 million. Like, that's not, I'm not scoffing at that. I'm not turning my nose up at that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be asking for $1 million. I think my only concern is that it's a moving target. And is it actually $1 million? It might be right now. But are they going to get that $1 million? And that's not the fault of Wichita State at all. That's the landscape of college athletics.
Yeah.
I would hate to, you know, have people give $1 million and they still don't win. And then next year it's, I need $2 million if we want to stay competitive. You know what I mean?
Be right back. We'll continue the discussion next.
not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. We're talking a lot of shockers. Letter from Kevin Saul to the university. It's a great talker. It's a great talker. We love that it's there. We love the information. We'll continue the conversation here and make sure we try to get to everybody's thoughts on it because I know there's a lot of passion around it. Just to wrap up, Adam, another great listener's thoughts on it when I was trying to compare it. And he said the difference with Creighton is that they're private and then Memphis has football. Right. That is correct. But the Big East teams are there and there are a lot of private ones in there. UConn's not. But again, like where do you see I think about this all the time, Tommy. If you want to like if people want to get like upset and the players are making too much money, when you see what's happening now and you see they're actually be valuations put on it. What would Fred Van Vliet and Ron Baker have been worth to this university?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you quantify
what,
that.
What sort of revenue did those and not just them, but that entire, like what kind of revenue did they generate? Well, they generated enough to coach that much. Like, you know what I mean? So like that's where you really have to like understand how backwards this has been for so long. And I say this all the time, like whether it's politics or something like that, like be careful when the pendulum swings back the other way. Like when it's been so out of whack for a while, that pendulum swing back is crazy.
And can we be honest for a second? Because I think this is kind of I might be saying the quiet part out loud that I've talked to a bunch of Shocker fans, a bunch of Wichitans over the years. I was here in the Final Four run. I was here in the undefeated season. The pendulum was out of whack during that time. Like it was fantastic.
Well,
it was great. It was phenomenal. The pendulum has swung back, but it's those. To make those expectations, and I'm not saying that there shouldn't be expectations of success. There absolutely should be for sure. But like those were a couple of like almost catching lightning in a bottle type years. And the pendulum has now swung back the other direction. And you know what? I think that's okay as long as you can get it, you know, in a reasonable place moving forward.
So I think those like, the expectations to be in the Final Four every year are probably out of whack, but the expectations for this program to reach the NCAA tournament every year is not.
That's out not. Of whack. Yeah, that's not what I'm saying. And, that's not out of whack. And going so, undefeated like, again, until you play Kentucky in the second round of the NCAA tournament, that's unrealistic to happen every single year.
Yeah, yeah. Gonzaga's been doing this for 20 years now.
Yeah,
right. Like these types of programs. Are they happen everyone. Yes, Gonzaga is another private school. I get it. They have no TV deal, essentially, right? And the beauty of the private, public, all of that now, we don't have to pretend to care about that anymore. Nobody's saying, like, Kevin Saul didn't write a letter to lawmakers saying, hey, we need, you know, no, this is all privately funded money anyway. It doesn't matter if you're private or public. So, right, you have a large city with a great venue in order, like the all the things are there. Now you have to be able to go get the players. And that is why they're asking for $1 million to stay competitive and be able to go get the players. It is very hard to get, and it's going to be harder for the appetite for it now. And I do wonder, as things are unstable, we'll call it, in the economy right now, the fallout from to the portal. Like, I would say it this way. If I was a portal player, I'd have tried to get a deal done 3 days ago, because you never know.
I don't know if it trickles down that quickly.
I would hold tight and watch that for a minute, because there's a lot of people that have lost a lot of money in the last 2 days that might not be as prone to write a $1 million check to a university to go get a basketball player. We'll see. Maybe not. But you got to get the players, right? And that, so that's what they're asking for. And it sounds like asking for $1 million sounds crazy. It's funny because some people think it's insane to ask for $1 million, and some people think it's insane to only ask for $1 million. But like, it's, that's what's been very funny about the reaction to this.
And by the way, universities have been asking for millions of dollars forever. I mean, like, this is nothing new. It's new in where the money is being funneled to and the reason why they need $1 million. But this is nothing new. I mean, you know, college athletics, it's a development play. Like, that's the way, like, you've got fundraisers. Like, I would say Kevin Saul's job, like, if you were to put a pie chart and break out the different features of his job, I don't know exactly what the percentages are, but a large portion of it is fundraiser, right? Like, that is a large portion of that job description has got to be fundraiser.
Most years, I would say it's probably like 90%.
Yeah.
Then in a year you have to make a hire, you can probably refocus that a little bit. But most of the time, yeah, it's 90%. John says $1 million isn't going to make Paul Mills a better coach. When do we start talking about the strong possibility this coaching staff isn't working out? John, we've been talking about it for a year and a half, right? Like, you can't make – I mean, is it going to make him a better coach? Well, I think every coach in the country would tell you that better players make better coaches. So it's not going to hurt. Now, is he the right coach for the program? I think that's very much in the air right now. I think he fits the culture and the style that Kevin Saul has laid out, and the university through Kevin Saul has laid out. Is that going to lead to the amount of success on the court that it needs to? It has not through 2 years, in my opinion. That's where Kevin Saul and I differ greatly in his letter. I do not think it's been a successful first 2 years, and I think it needs to be much better. I hope that it is for Paul Mills. I like Paul Mills. I think that he is a fun coach to follow, and I hope that it works. Has it worked so far? It has not worked so far. It hasn't. So we'll see. I mean, we're going into a pretty critical year, which is why I'm like, oh man, the roster's got to completely turn over.
It's not a pretty critical year. It is the most critical year. I mean,
to us it is, whether it is to the university.
Well, I mean, I believe that it absolutely is. And it goes back to what I talked about earlier this week when we knew that Corey Washington was entering the portal, is that you've got now a complete clean slate. You have to replace all of your production for the most part. I think Taylor Eldridge said that it's like 98-point-something% of your production, your points scored a season ago, you have to replace. And I think that there's no better time to evaluate, and I know that John says strong possibility that the coaching staff just simply isn't working out. There's no better time, in my opinion, to evaluate whether or not that's a strong possibility or not than this year, when he gets to build a roster. And I'm not even saying where he has to build a roster. He gets to build a roster in his own image, the way that he wants to put this team together. I'm not even talking about a financial resource question about whether or not he's got the dollars to be able to go get the guys that he wants, because you could always have more money to go get better guys. But what I'm talking about is building a team in his image, the way he wants this program to be. You're never going to have a better evaluation time, in my opinion, then coming into this coming season, once we see what he's put together and whether or not it comes to fruition and they have success with it. So I feel like it is the most critical year of the Paul Mills era coming up, even more so than this season we just wrapped up, because he's going to have the opportunity to really show his chops more so than he ever has been able to.
We think that.
I believe that.
What I'm saying,
wholeheartedly believe that.
I do too. But what I'm saying is, I don't know if Kevin Saul
or you might be
Richard
right.
Muma thinks that.
You might be right.
That's what I. Yeah. So I totally agree, but I don't know that they agree. Let me ask you this. Let's play hypotheticals here. We had the Andy call in and ask about Isaac Brown. Didn't think he should have been fired. I wouldn't say we were in that camp, but we were right on the fence on that.
No, I was. I remember being, I thought it was the wrong decision to make at the time.
I was on the fence because I had heard that they were not getting where they needed to be in NIL. Either way, Isaac Brown went 17-15, finished 9-9, sixth in the American. Paul Mills this year was 19-15. Let's say they're one win better than that, and that he is 20-14, 9-9 record, and finishes sixth in the American, which is essentially what Isaac Brown did in his final year in which he was fired. Is that going to be good enough? I would tell you for fans, the answer would be no. But I would tell you for the administration, I'll bet you he would get another year.
I'm not going to argue with you on that because I think you're right. I think that we would continue to have the hand wringing and the teeth gnashing and all of that over, even if it is an incremental slight improvement. But I do think that there would be a point to be made that, hey, there's improvement. The arrow is pointed upward. And we're going to need more money next year to be able to get to fifth in the American. You know what I mean? Like, I think that you're kind of kicking the can down the road. And, I think you also have to read between the lines a little bit and understand the context behind it. That what's another option? What's a better option right now? Who else is out there right now that you can go and bring in and do a better job than this? And I think that's part of it also.
You can't be scared of that. There are a lot of coaches that would love to have Wichita State. I think it's more we're trying to paint a black and white picture. Ben McCollum just went to Drake. There are coaches out there. Like, we're trying to paint a black and white picture of a very gray area, right? Like, and that's the issue. If that 500 record in sixth place includes a bunch of young players that you know you could return the following year, and then it would be different, right? But we don't know any of that yet. I think that, like, for me, what I look at as much as anything else is what does the American Athletic Conference currently consist of, right? And when I look at that and I look at the schools there, for Wichita State to now for 3 years, or if you go back to Isaac Brown, who finished seventh and sixth in the conference, which is also not good enough, by the way, even though it was a better conference then, still not good enough. Like, to go seventh, sixth, 10th, 8th this year to whatever it is next year, and I look at what the American is, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
It's not. You can't finish behind some of these schools consistently.
You know me, and you know how much I enjoy quotes and cliches and things like that. If you're a sports fan, one of your favorite movies is probably Remember the Titans. And you remember that quote from the assistant coach, Coach Yost, before the team goes out and plays, and he says, "Leave no doubt." That's what Paul Mills has to do this coming season. That's the best way to quiet all of this. Leave no doubt that you are the long-term coach of this program. Leave no doubt that the program is in a better place now than it was when you took over. I get it. I get the incremental growth argument. And that's what I think as of right now, everybody's kind of hanging their hat on, and the administration is like, hey, there's growth. It's better. It's the arrows pointed upward. That's fine. I get that. And I recognize you're trying to hold on to something to show progress. Totally get it. But I think of that quote, like, the best thing you can possibly do going into this coming season with a brand new fresh roster and all of that is leave no doubt. Shut us up. Shut everybody up. Leave no doubt that this is the, it makes it totally, and it's easier said than done, absolutely,
yeah.
But that's the best thing that they could possibly do, regardless of a million more dollars in the bank account to go get players or not, is go, just leave no doubt on the court.
I mean, for me, look, it's simple. I don't have time. I don't have energy for excuses, patience, none of it. Most fans don't. Just win a bunch of games. But just win a bunch of games. $1 million is going to help them get there. I don't know. It's not my world. I don't know what fundraising in the college athletics world is like. I have absolutely no idea. None. I don't know how easy or difficult that is to raise. No clue.
Good well, and luck. I think that, you know, it's, you can't, I'm not sure that in this world right now, I'm not sure you can moneyball it, right? Like, I'm not sure that you can be analytical and say, how much is each additional win worth? Like, I think it'd be great if you could try, but I'm not sure that that's realistic in this landscape, in this environment. You know, like, how much do we spend on a player? And what will that then translate into? I'm not sure that it's a correlation or I'm not sure that I don't think you can draw that correlation. It'd be great if you could. I mean, that's what a lot of teams do in the professional world is they moneyball it. They assign a value probably down to the penny on what each player is worth and how that translates into wins. You're buying additional wins. How does that all work? I'm not sure that you can do that in this world.
You can't in the Wild West, free reign of everything. You'd have to have more structure. And again, I think that we will. But the problem and why it's been harder for me to swallow is whatever that settling of things is, you want to make sure you're on the right side of it when that happens. And so being successful now is more important. Let me see if I can say this the right way. Being more successful right now is more important than what it'll be, let's call it 6 or 7 years from now, because I think whatever the settling of things is with what the portal is and what NIL is and the regulation of it, I think you want to be successful when that all gets done, because you don't know how it's going to get done. And you don't want to be on the other side of the haves and have nots if there is a settling that way. And so it's really important that they get this turned around very, very quickly to me. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but there is more of an urgency to do it now than there will be, I think, down the road. Because I think once the dust settles, the dust will settle. And then we'll kind of know what this looks like. And you want to be on the right side of that. All right, let's take a quick pivot here because we've got Royals talk with Jalen Thompson coming up next. Tommy, let's talk about the final four here real quick, our bets. It's pretty simple for me. I'm just betting the lines here. And I need to, you know, like, I'm taking Houston. I'll probably take the points instead of the money line. I don't know about that. I might actually just take the money line. But with Florida, I'll lay the 2.5. So I'm taking Florida -2.5. I'm for sure taking Houston +5, and I might just take Houston on the money line.
I love the Florida bet. I'm doing the same thing that you are. I'm laying those points. I think I'm leaning towards staying away from the Houston and Duke game in general. You know, because it's appetizing to try to take those points or even Houston on the money line, to your point. But man, Duke's got the best offense in the country. And I don't have a good betting gauge on this game. I think it's going to be an instant classic. I just don't know if I'm going to bet it.
I'm glad you said that. Let me be perfectly transparent. That is a me wanting my brackets to win bet. The smart money is probably on Duke -5. So let me clarify that for just a second. Like, those will be what I bet, but that's because I'm all in with Houston, right? I have futures on them to win a championship. Like, I'm all in with Houston. I think the smart bet right now, like with UConn the last couple of years, like, Houston is showing us, Duke is showing us some things that they may just be too much for everybody. As good as the other three teams are, and they are fantastic, Duke could be too much. The thing that sticks out to me more than anything else is they are dependent on a freshman, right? And you just never know what a true freshman is like. Is there ever that moment where they get shook?
Now, he hasn't shown
incredible.
It. He's never shown it. I mean, that we'll see. I'm riding
but
with
would
Houston.
You have any, like, let's say it's the exact same, everything's the same, and Cooper Flagg is a junior, right? Like, that ain't a 5-point line. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, I think the smart money is probably on Duke, but I'm all in with Houston, so I'm betting Houston.
I would love to see Kelvin Sampson get it done. I'm going to be cheering for Houston for sure.
Everybody in this part of the world is going.
That's going to be tough.
Go Big 12.
Right? And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Jalen Thompson, KC Star, Royals beat reporter. We are back to baseball, and we're glad to be back to baseball. Jalen, how are you? After a day off, recharged.
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Hanging in there.
We're good.
We're good. We're excited. Baseball's back. I'll tell you that. Let's before we get into the weekend series with the Orioles, let's look back a little bit on the first part of this. I would ask it to you this way, and we'll see your thoughts on it. Through the first, what have we played? Like 8 games, first weekend change. What would you say stands out to you the most about this Royals team?
I think the bullpen is as advertised, and it will be as advertised, looking at kind of some of those situations that they had against last week when they were in playing those games. I'm blanking on the name. It's been so many crazy days. But, yeah, I think the bullpen is a key in Milwaukee. You saw what Lucas Erceg did. You saw what Carlos Estevez did in that game, that finale where the Brewers walked it off, but they don't get to extra innings without Erceg getting out of a jam, Estevez getting out of a jam, Daniel Lynch doing the same thing, John Schreiber, Hunter Harvey. So I think the bullpen stands out the most against the Brewers. And I think that the offense, the 5-9, we talked about it this spring. We talked about it beginning of spring training. It has to get stronger, and it just isn't there. And I think that's another thing that stands out to me. They aren't getting production in that lineup, 5-9.
Yeah, let's talk about that lineup a little bit. I mean, you know, outside of, honestly, Jonathan India and Michael Garcia, there haven't been really a lot. There's not been a lot of consistent offense from the rest of the guys. Even the top guys, you know, in that lineup, whether we're talking about Bobby Witt Jr., Pasquantino, Salvi Perez, like those guys are, they're contributing for sure. Don't get me wrong. But consistently, consistent hits and getting on base, it's India and Garcia right now.
Exactly. That's you hit the nail on the head right there, Tommy. Jonathan India and Michael Garcia are the ones that are getting on base. India has 8 hits. Garcia has 6 hits. And you can say Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez has the same amount of hits, but it's the way that they're getting those hits. It's the quality of those hits. And I look back at that Wednesday's game against the Brewers. Jonathan India hits a double, and I believe it was the 8th inning or so. And you had the harder lineup coming up. You had Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez. India's on second base. He should score with the game tie, and you go ahead and get the one run advantage, and you can try to close it out with a save. That did not happen. And you look at some of the swings. Salvi swung at a couple of pitches that maybe he shouldn't have been swinging at. And you might have took a couple pitches and worked the count a little bit more, but that didn't happen. And then you go on to extra innings and you're seeing Hunter Renfroe. He struck out 4 times against the Brewers in Wednesday's game. Can't do that. You have to have competitive at-bats, and this team is just not doing that right now. And I think you're seeing it up and down the lineup outside of the guys you mentioned, in Jonathan India and Michael Garcia.
At the same time, it is pretty nice seeing India return on the investment a little bit. I want to go back to the bullpen for a second, Jalen. I think that the Harvey, Erceg, Estevez is going to be great. What about getting to those guys, right? And right now we've seen the starters, other than Bubich, not get into that 6th inning. But in those games where they can only give you 5, it hasn't been Zerpa. He's been objectively bad. Sam Long hasn't been great. Like, who do you think is most likely to step up with those other 3 and become that 4th guy?
I think it's Daniel Lynch. I really do.
In 1 inning, do you think he'll convert over to a 1 inning guy, or do you think they'll use him the way they've been using him?
They like using him in that 1+2 inning, you know, kind of clean up, mop up duty, or bridge the gap. But I guess I know he can do it, but that's not what you kind of want him to be in that role to do. You want the Zerpas and the Sam Longs to do that. But if they're not getting it done, then you might have to put them in that role. I mean, I don't think you mess with Harvey, Erceg, and Estevez late. I don't think you do that. So if you don't mess with those 3 guys late, your options are Daniel Lynch or John Schreiber, or you dust off Chris Stratton, which I don't think they want to do for that spot.
Let's talk about the rotation a little bit, Jalen. We've seen all 5 starters work their way through the rotation at least one time. Cole Reagans has pitched twice so far. What's your biggest takeaway? Was it kind of the revelation of Chris Bubich back in the rotation? Was it Michael Wacha not pitching great in his one start? What's your big takeaway from the rotation?
I think the rotation is going to settle in. I think you saw it out of Cole Reagans on Wednesday. He came back with a vengeance, 10 strikeouts, look like Cole Reagans, right? I think, you know, getting the first start out of the way, we got to remember when spring training ends and the season begins, you have a long layoff before you kind of start pitching. You know, those 4 or 5 days before the opening day, those guys that might have pitched the last few days of spring training didn't really get their timing to start for the regular season. Chris Bubich did that. You know, he was able to pitch that very last game before opening day in Texas, and then he got himself together, right? He was on regular rest. But the other guys, they had to kind of had an extra day or two to get prepared. I think that you will see a better Seth Lugo today. You'll see a better Michael Wacha tomorrow. And I think you'll just see the rotation kind of round into form. But I will say that the first time through, it did not look good. It looked inefficient. It looked like they were rusty a little bit. It looked like they just weren't ready. But I think Cole Reagans set the tone with his second start. You saw the 10 strikeouts. You saw the fastball play up. You saw his ability to work both sides. And the Brewers, they took some swings that, you know, didn't look like they were matched well against his fastball and his secondary pitches. So if Cole Reagans, I mean, Seth Lugo can do that against the Orioles, then I think that the lineup is going to be intact. You know what they did last year, and I think they are those same pitchers. So one star, you can't define them like that.
Yeah, and if you look at what comes up in this, we'll just look at the Orioles series here. The Orioles, you're not going up against their best either. So it looks like a pitching advantage coming home to Kansas City, and it's a team we absolutely all think will be there in the end, and the Orioles, they might be the best team in the American League for all we know. You get them, you get these pitching matchups, and you get it at home. And when we look back at things late in the year, this is a pretty big series coming up here, starting at home on this evening.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at April, the Royals have a tough April. I mean, you talk about, you open with the Guardians, then you have the Brewers, then you got the Orioles, three teams that both, I mean, all made the playoffs last year.
And the Twins.
On top of that, coming up, and then you got to go to Detroit and New York and Cleveland again. And it's a hard schedule of playoff teams and teams that almost made the playoffs. So I think that in the Royals' case, this is a big series because you have to win this one at home. You have 7-game homestand coming up. You got to get on track. You got to get some motion. The AL Central is wide open. We saw it. 2-4, where pretty much every team had that record. It was pretty funny to see, like, there was no one in first place and there was no one in fifth place. They all had the same record. But, yeah, this is a big series to get on track. They know the Orioles. They just played them in the playoffs. They know what they're about. Both teams really didn't change that much. It's about who wants it more. And I think that the Royals, they can do it, but they have to hit. They cannot go into this series without hitting the baseball like they weren't doing against the Brewers and against the Guardians. They have to get some runs, some production. I think I saw a stat where in game one against the Brewers, they had 14 hits and 11 runs. The last two games, they only registered, I believe, 6 or 7 hits combined in those two runs that they scored. So you can't be on and off and early in the season. You gotta find that consistency. It's still a long way to go, but if the Royals don't hit the way that we all expect them to hit, the way they expect to hit, it could be a long season, and it could be something where you might have to consider reinforcements in AAA or wherever to get that production, because the time is now. You made the playoffs last year. There's no excuses for we're going to sit back and try to continue to develop. You know, you're here now, and you're expected to be a contender, so you have to play like one.
One more from me, Jalen. Kind of a concerning trend that I think came about, and it follows up on what you were talking about with the hitting, is that the Royals, especially against Milwaukee, they were leaving runners on base. They were leaving runners stranded, especially in scoring position. They were not able to get those runs in, and that could have absolutely flipped that Brewer series on its head. What do you think they need to do in this upcoming series and moving forward to try to have at least more clutch hitting? Is it just as simple as the guys from 5 to 9 need to produce more, or is there something more specific?
Yeah, I talked to Michael Massey and I asked the same question that you just asked me, Tommy. And he said that, you know, guys are hitting balls at right at other guys, and you know, those are contributing to outs and things like that. They are confident in the type of bats that they're having, and they know things can turn around. But what I think the Royals need to do, I think they just need to get back to, you know, playing ABC baseball and trying to move a runner over. Maybe you have to start bunting a little bit to get some momentum going. The reason why I say that is because if you have Michael Garcia and Jonathan India both contributing at the bottom of the order and at the top of the order, that means the lineup is flipping over. And if the lineup is flipping over, you got to have your run producers. You got to have those guys drive those runs in. And maybe it's just getting more quality at bats, taking a walk or so, you know, working a pitch count. Michael Massey does that better than anyone on the team as far as working a pitch count. He'll have a 12-pitch at bat in a heartbeat. But I think more guys got to start doing that and maybe not start chasing first pitch, but take a couple of pitches, get to see what the pitcher has in his repertoire and then work from there. That's what the Royals did last year and that made them very successful. There was a lot of games where the starting pitcher had 60 pitches after three innings. Maybe they need to get back to doing that.
Jalen, we appreciate it. You've got all kinds of stuff going for us at the KC Star at Jalen Thompson on X. We'll be back next week. I'm glad you brought up the point of that schedule. It does not give relief here for a little while, and that's no excuse. The Royals, I think, are right there with any of those teams, but maybe it's more of a reset our April expectations, get out of this month around 500, and then beat up on the teams you should. It's an interesting point. You'll have all the coverage for us, by the way. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And I will preface this by saying, before I go, it's only been six games.
I know, so right. Yeah.
We can't overreact. I know it's fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah, we want to, though. Like, this is sports talk. Great. We're going to overreact.
We're going to overreact on everything. That's what we do.
Every day. Tommy and I are emotionally connected to baseball. Like, it can ruin. My buddy just sent me a meme. It's a guy looking in the mirror and said, I will not be emotionally tethered to every day of baseball for the next 7 months. And I don't agree with that.
Jalen, I know you're a Georgia guy. I'm a lifelong Braves fan. I have been since I was a little kid. They're 0-7. Like
Tommy's having
like I'm falling off a cliff right now, so it happens.
My dad is the same way. He's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
Well, they're terrible.
We're worried about slow starts in Major League Baseball.
Exactly.
On this program.
Thanks,
Jalen. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys. See you guys next week.
Yeah, it'll be a good series. You'll have the Royals here with us this weekend. It's a big one against the Orioles, and it's not a big one because it's April. But you got to remember, at the end of the day, when you're like navigating and sorting through Tommy playoff standings and who's going to make a wild card, and like games against the other playoffs teams, it doesn't matter if you play them in April. It doesn't matter if you play them in August. They count the same. So any time that you play the good teams. Like those are probably at the end of the day, those head-to-head opportunities to position yourselves. Everybody should be beating up on the bad teams. It's what do you do against those good teams and what do you do at home that matters. So it's a moderately big series for the Royals here this week.
It is. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see them start to hit a little bit more.
All right, that's it for Sports Daily. Real quick, you've got all kinds of baseball between the Shockers and the Royals. A lot of it on KFH, some of it on KNSS. So bounce around, listen to the baseball with us here at our family and networks. A lot of great commentary, I think, from the listeners, from the viewers of the video stream today. We appreciate all of that. We all want Shocker basketball to be awesome. So we'll continue to digest that, I'm sure, into next week. So we appreciate that. Tommy, enjoy the baseball this weekend. Maybe the Braves will get you a win.
Ah, man, fingers crossed. I hope so. Really enjoyed the show today. Really, really good conversation. Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week.
I agree. I love having those conversations with the listeners. We all have the same goal in the end. We'll see everybody on Monday. Thanks for being here. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Tommy. Thanks, Jalen Thompson. Bye.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.